The announcement that not just the Republican House announcing, you know, that they are going to fully, you know, get in President Biden the shoes with the handlebars on the sides for the upcoming probe. This is going to be big. But that Nancy Pelosi has made her announcement. Do you have the music requested, Andrew, if you could?
Let the joyous news be spread. The wicked old witch at last is dead.
That's right! I do that in honor of John because I do respect the man and respect his views and respect his audience. And I know what a joyous day is for everyone on the right. Nancy Pelosi, a historic figure in American politics. The only two-term... I believe, into two separate terms, Speaker of the House from 07 to 11 and then again from 19 till now.
Yes, that's right. She's 82 years old. She served 35 years. And, you know, her introduction.
A lot of people think it should have been life, by the way, when she was sentenced to 35 years. A lot of people thought it should have been life.
Right.
But I
can't. You know, her introduction to Congress began when she talked about when she was 6 years old. And her father, of course, was the mayor of Baltimore. And then he went on to be, you know, a long-term politician. So this is almost in Nancy Pelosi's DNA. I mean, it has been her whole life. Although she did say that, you know, she went from being a housewife to, you know, someone in Congress. And, she went on to talk a lot about what she was able to accomplish and what she felt about things. One thing that was pointed out, though, was she did say in her speech, I know we have a little audio of some of what she said, but one thing that she did say, Spike, was that she was, you know, very happy to have worked with three presidents, George Bush, Obama, and Joe Biden.
That's a little petty. That's a little petty.
I'll tell you something. You know, I do respect Nancy Pelosi for the trailblazer that she was. But I also, you know, I did not always agree with her politics, did not agree with the way that she presented things and felt that she really did serve a little bit too long. And I thought she was, a political opportunist. Not that anybody in politics isn't.
Right.
but I have to tell you, the thing that really bothered me, and I'd love your take on this, when Trump made, you know, the State of the Union speech, and I agree that some of it really was outrageous, that particular speech. When she tore up that speech, I understood where she was coming from, but I thought that was really tacky. What did you think about that?
I have two pieces of tape that I watch on a continuous basis whenever I'm feeling blue. The first is Joe Theismann's leg being broken by Lawrence Taylor on Monday Night Football. Because as a Baltimore Colt fan, I was born and raised to hate the Washington Redskins and thus Joe Theismann. So whenever I was feeling bad, I just watched Theismann's leg get snapped in half. Made me feel better. Okay. The second piece of tape is Nancy Pelosi ripping up the State of the Union by Donald Trump. I watch that tape on a loop at least two, three times an hour. No, I'm kidding. I thought it was petty. I thought it was this beneath the office she held.
Yes.
But I will say this. How better, more effective way to say to the American people, to your constituents mainly, of course, but to the American people, that what this president has just delivered as the State of the Union was so full of misrepresentations, flat out falsehoods and grievances that it didn't warrant the respect that a political address, a presidential address to the joint members of Congress is due. I thought it was a cheesy way to make the message, but when you're playing checkers, you don't move your knight to rook three or whatever. You play checkers. And when the political environment that under the Trump administration had devolved into name-calling through the primaries, everything we devolved to under the Trump administration, for Nancy Pelosi to not speak in that arena, I think that's an unrealistic expectation. I started by saying it was petty. It was petty.
Yeah, I didn't think that was the appropriate way to do it. But moving on.
And people who thought she was destroying government documents, you know, because she tore.
Come on, I don't believe that.
I agree. That's the kind of her hyperbole we have descended to, much like, you know, her ripping up the papers. It was better than the folks saying she should be investigated for destroying government documents. I mean, let's all just reel it into reality a little bit.
Well, you know, it's interesting to think what, you know, how much this attack on her husband played into this. She will now be Hakeem Jeffries, who's from New York, is going to be, he's the current caucus chair. He's going to seek the role of minority leader. It would have been challenged by Adam Schiff, but he's decided to now have a Senate run. So it looks like Mr. Jeffries will be the new, you know, Democratic leader. And it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out and how things really shift. Politico called it the most seismic shift since 1994. And so, you know, what role will she play? I mean, she's going to continue to serve and she's going to continue to be a fixture. Will she be able to sit back? It's a little unprecedented that she's going to take this lesser role. Usually when people go, they just go.
They go. They're out the door. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's going to stick around. And, you know, how is that going to be? How, I mean, it's, you know, a bit of a demotion, if you will. So how's that going to play out?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because that was my main concern when I heard the announcement today. The announcement, as you said, really came as no surprise. And I think that the attack on her husband, if she wasn't already leaning towards surrendering control of the Democratic caucus to the next generation of Democrats, if she wasn't already leaning that way, the attack on her husband sealed it. There was no way, shape, or form, I felt, she would return and try to reclaim the speakership. No way. But that being said, she's got decades of experience. You know, one of the things people say about Nancy Pelosi, and you can have all the problems in the world with her politics and her political views, or her policy agenda, but she was a person that could work with other members of Congress. She could build coalitions. She could hold coalitions together. You know, people say the Biden administration has been a disaster. A lot of people also point to the fact that they've accomplished quite a bit given the razor thin margin they've had to work with. And that's due in large part all the accomplishments that they have been able to put together, whether it is, COVID relief, whether it is infrastructure, whether it is support for our veterans in the way of exposure to toxic materials, whether it's the CHIP Act that's already bringing back manufacturing and jobs and security and stability and national security to the American people through production of chips. Those things are massive accomplishments for a first-term president in the first half of his term, given such a razor-thin margin in Congress and such a divided Congress. That being said, she knows how to play the game. And I hope she doesn't just fall off into the distance and not take part. I think anybody who takes over leadership of the minority Democratic caucus in Congress is going to need her expertise, her experience, and her on the bench getting anything accomplished, which I doubt seriously will happen for the next 2 years.
I have to tell you, Spike, the elephant in the room here is her age. I mean,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
She's 82 years old. And I think I read something the other day that it's an extraordinary number of people in Congress and in general that are in their 70s and 80s. And
yeah,
you have to wonder a little bit about their effectiveness. I mean, I get that she's got, you know, powerful connections, and she still is a force to be reckoned with, no
right.
matter what role she's in. I will give her that, even
right.
though I disagree with a lot of her politics. But at 82 years old, I mean, no matter how sharp you are, no matter how much energy you have, it is relative to your age. I mean, that is something that is significant.
Do you think that she had a less effective role given that she was 82? Do you think that a person in their 60s or 50s could have accomplished more as speaker than Nancy Pelosi did?
I don't think there's any way to answer that question because I don't know, because if you aren't behind the scenes and you don't know if there's anything that seems off, I will say this. I found her to be difficult to listen to when she was just speaking off the cuff. She seemed to have a tremendously difficult time articulating things sometimes, where she would stumble and start over again or whatever. Is that a function of age? Is that a function of just, you know, being in the public eye? I don't know. And we won't know that because
no.
We're not on the inside.
Right.
But I do think, you know, anybody that's 82, your time's kind of done there.
I hear you. I couldn't agree with you more. I wish there was someone that she clearly should have given the gavel to other than herself. But I don't know that person was present in the Democratic Party. I think she was the default Speaker of the House because no one else seemed up for the challenge. And I'm a Democrat, and I like the Democratic Party, but I don't think, you know, King Jeffries is up and coming. But coming out of the Trump administration in the middle of a pandemic, and I don't know that he could have gotten done what Pelosi accomplished. And you're right about the age factor. I wish Nancy Pelosi was the oldest member of Congress. She's not even close. There are so many members of Congress that have stayed too long at the fair.
Well, we were going to talk about Dianne Feinstein, and she's 89 years old. Now, we don't know what's happening with her because we're not her doctor, so we have no idea.
Right.
But 89 years old is, I mean, that for most people is, you know, the time of your life when you are enjoying just, you know, I mean, even if you do have energy and even if you do, even if you're remarkable at 89.
That's when you bounce your great, great grandchildren on your knee.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm the last person to put somebody out to pasture because I don't ever want to retire. I don't know what I'll be doing for the rest of my life, but I want to keep going and keep being productive as long as I possibly can.
Right.
But I do think when it comes to serving your constituents, that has to be something that we factor in. And that's when we get into the talk about term limits, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, is it something that should be seriously considered because it's people in politics for life?
Well, there's an upside to tenure, you know, yes. Obviously, right? People who take Mitch McConnell, for example. He gets so much done for the people of Kentucky because he's been there so long. If someone came in every 8 years, maybe it would be a more level playing field for all states involved. But they're never going to vote against their own ability to wield power and do well for their constituents. No, from whatever party you represent, no one's going to ever vote against that benefit of tenure. So I'm with you on people, you know, aging out. I think like the DMV, maybe the Senate, before you get sworn back in, you got to have an eye test, drive a car around the block, answer a few simple questions, do some simple math. Because I remember them wheeling Strom Thurmond onto the Senate floor.
I do, too.
You know, I mean, you know, it's not just this. It's always been that way. At least now, at least we can at least take some comfort in saying that the two representatives we talked about, both a rep and a senator, are women. Of that age and that era, it used to be all just old white men, you know, and we finally got diversity in Congress, some balanced representation in Congress, both from ethnic perspective, from a gender perspective. Those are good things. But, you know, we talked about Dianne Feinstein because it was announced that Patty Murray is it being offered the Senate pro tem or has
she
it
is.
Been she's been picked by Senate leadership?
Yes. So she calls this an honor. She's going to be the fourth most senior member of the next Senate and the second most senior Democrat. So she is, you know, Chuck Schumer is going to nominate her. And, you know, I don't think there's going to be any opposition because that would make her then the third in line for the presidency.
Right. Behind the vice president, the speaker, and then the Senate pro tem.
Yep.
And it was Feinstein under the last Congress?
Yes. So that's what it was going right. Would have been. There was some confusion, however. She said to the Washington Post she wasn't interested. She was not going to do this. And then there was a reporter that tried to catch up with her in an aide. And they said, hey, by the way, you know, this is coming up. What do you think about it? And she said, well, I haven't thought about it yet. And the aide had to remind her that she had already gone on record saying,
yeah.
You already said this wasn't something that you wanted to do, remember?
Yeah.
And so Chuck Schumer, not on board with, you know, her. He's already asked her twice, apparently, behind the scenes to step down. And there are reports of as many as four or five other people going to her saying it's time for you to, you know, pass the baton.
She'll be 89, right?
She is 89.
Oh, my. Yeah, I mean... You know, there are very sharp and cognitive seniors in all lines of work. But when it's the people who make the policies or deal with the crises that affect our lives on a day-to-day basis, you want folks who are on their game. And that starts all the way from the Oval Office on down. I hear the criticisms of President Biden, and some of them are hyperbolic and unwarranted, but some of them have absolute merit about his ability to do the job. And... You know, I think in the absence of holding on to power, doing what's best for the American people ought to be job one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Who, by the way, I think he turns 80 this weekend.
President Biden?
Yep.
Yeah. I think they're getting. I'm not going to make a joke. I was going to make a joke. Oh no, no, I won't do it. I won't do it. I won't do it.
You can make a joke.
No, I won't do it. Okay, I won't do it. Right. Okay. Put a candle in his oatmeal. I love this job. Song. You too. Welcome back, everybody. Cairo Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill. This is a story. The Pierce County Sheriff says they're not selling swag on social media. Come on, folks. What?
Well, that means Herschel Walker won't be visiting. He'd like to add that one to his collection.
I was going
to
say, there goes my Herschel Walker Halloween costume next season. Thanks, Matt. I can't let you run to the finish line. I just can't give you a break like that. You're going to take that opportunity and run with the ball. Good job. Comedy Minds, my friend, won't you help? Send your tax deductible dollars now to get Matt and Spike a life. Your dollars right now. Let's see. A great story about the UW. We're talking about, you know, self-soothing and mental health and taking time out to take care of yourself, given all the stress and anxiety and pressure that we're all living under these days. And we can do this now. UW, to train teachers, proper mental health services as demand grows. So what the UW is doing, and this is UW Bothell, they're offering programs to states or Washington State teachers to help them recognize some of the mental health issues that their students are facing and how to help deal with these situations, how to be a first line of defense when we see situations developing. Because teachers are the most involved of all the people in your life outside of your kid's family. Is there, at least it should be. It was when I was a kid. I think it still is today. I think it's a safe thing to say that teachers, given the fact that we're now back to schools and we're not learning remotely anymore, that was a horrible situation we tried to make the best of, probably didn't do the best job we could have. But teachers are back with kids, and giving teachers the tools to recognize potential mental health situations, potential crises, and the tools to how to not investigate, but how to just ask the right questions, how to engage students they think might be undergoing mental health crisis, the stresses and anxieties that I was just talking about in the students. And students have never had a harder time than right now. You know, the pandemic was tough on all of us, toughest on students, I think, because they were kind of left to their own devices and given a lot of them felt some time off from school. So it's been, you know, widely reported and thoroughly researched that student scores and performance dropped significantly during the pandemic, an inevitability of the health situation, health emergency we found ourselves in, possibly exacerbated by mishandling of the situation. Quite possible that was the case. But let's not worry about blame. Let's worry about dealing with the problem we face. The program was launched after numbers provided by the university showed youth feelings of anxiety and hopelessness have skyrocketed. The program will help university's goal to train high school educators, a position that is expected to serve as more than just a teacher to an embattled generation, but also a potential friend, counselor, first responder, eyeballs. We had that horrific situation last week at Ingram High School, and it's been, you know, talked about ad nauseum. What can we do? What could we have done? But more importantly, what can we do? You know, again, finding out how things happen is the first step of making sure they don't happen again. And we talked about how the Seattle school teachers went on strike last year for more support, in large part in the way of counselors in schools. Before the strike, there was one counselor for every 375 students. Now there's, with some additional help, one counselor for every 325 students. So clearly, there's not enough counselors in schools, given that students' senses of anxiety and hopelessness have skyrocketed, as these studies show, that teachers need to be better trained to recognize these situations and, you know, maybe bring the right resources in, speak to parents when necessary, speak to the kids first and foremost. Sometimes just having someone listen to what you're going through can be enough to defuse a situation. This is a school nurses for many students are the only health care they get, which is wrong. That's part of the story here, and I want to go back and get the right the quote from this person. Go back and just pardon me there, folks. I'm going to dive back in the top of the story. Robin Fleming is a PhD, an assistant teaching professor at UW Bothell. We have students that have PTSD, depression, anxiety, suicidality. Suicidality. I had never heard that term before. That, I guess, is possessing suicidal thoughts or tendencies. Suicidality. And we can help them. She's so right. Fleming used to be a school nurse before the pandemic, years before. She said they were already stretching thin. They were already stretched thin before COVID-19, and now the teachers are getting overwhelmed. I think this is a fantastic idea. It's difficult to find providers in the community that aren't already full on their caseloads, said Cricket Sutton, a school psychologist at Meadowdale High School, who believes more students are dealing with anxiety now and struggling with issues and struggling to find off-campus help. Educators in the Puget Sound region have been sounding the alarm, sometimes in unison, chanting along a picket line. Striking union members in Seattle and Kent demanded more counselors, as we said, in schools and lower caseloads, and often 325 students per counselor. Leaders in the state have repeatedly emphasized their intent to equip schools with more support to better handle students' mental health needs. Governor Jay Inslee said it's an issue that must be addressed. So UW-Bothell has this program, and they're helping teachers learn the fundamentals of mental health. They're not going to become mental health providers in any way, shape, or form, but they're going to be trained on what to look for, how to make the initial steps of interceding, how to ask the right questions. You don't have to become a full-fledged mental health provider to know to learn what signs to look for, to learn what questions to ask, and how to, you know, if something's going off the rails, how to nudge things back on course for a kid, how to let a kid know that they are they're understood, they're heard, they're supported, and get students who need some help connected to the right help. The clinic at Meadowdale High School, there's a help. We talked about this about a month and a half ago, the first on-campus health facility at a public high school. It's up at Meadowdale High School. The clinic in that school plans to provide mental health services along with physical, behavioral, and even dental care for kids. I mean, you know, we always talk about how we take care of our students and how much money we throw at education. This is money well spent, because regardless of how much it costs or how many or how few kids it helps, giving teachers the ability, the training, and the permission to be more involved. I mean, teachers are already overworked and underpaid. I think everybody else should agree on that. If you don't, we need to talk. Teachers who are trained to know what to spot, how to engage, what questions to ask, the triggering questions to ask a kid, and get kids the help that they may need. That's great. Fantastic story. The whole story, by the way, was our own Sam Campbell, who's coming out of the gate strong here, new guy here at Cairo, doing great work. I know that he produced a piece, and he probably could have told you everything I took 10 minutes to tell you in 3 minutes and 20 seconds. And all I did was say, I think it's a good idea, on top of what Sam could have brought to you. I'm sorry. I probably should have let Sam talk, but I may have dozed off. You know, I'd put on some rain sounds, some beach waves, maybe some seagulls calling in the distance, the sound of a slug sliming on by, leaving that peaceful trail of whatever the hell that is they leave. But no, man, I think it's a great story. And again, it's on mynorthwest.com. You can read the whole thing. You know, you know what a mental health influencer is? A mental health influencer? They're on TikTok with hashtag mental health.
That explains why I haven't heard of them.
Yeah, exactly. Boy, I saw a great story today about how TikTok is digital fentanyl for our kids. And I'll dig that one up. We can talk about that a little bit too if we get a chance to. TikTok is dangerous. TikTok is how the majority of 30 and unders get their news nowadays. A majority of them get their information from TikTok. That's how short our attention span has become. I know. Makes me want to talk to a mental health professional just hearing stuff like that. You know, influencers in general, I don't get it. I don't get the concept. If I was one, maybe I'd be happy to be one.
DJs were the original influencers. That's why I'm so cranky and get off my lawn about it.
That's a great point. So if we just learn to turn our trade toward the digital platforms, we can become influencers again, right? So it behooves us. If we don't like the influencers' influence and what they're prioritizing, it's upon us as content providers, broadcasters, radio people, to get where they are, to go where the audience is.
So you're telling me it's now my job to cater to people with short attention spans?
No, I'm telling you that Kyra Knights needs a TikTok account and you're in charge. That's what I'm telling you. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Great. I'll get right
no
on
anxiety.
It. Maybe like next year.
Beaches. Waves. Seagulls. Nah, Matt, you don't, no more work on Matt's shoulders. It's not what I'm saying. It's Kyra Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill. Teachers are getting the opportunity to learn from UW how to better spot mental health situations with their students and how to better deal with them. The story's at MyNorthWest.com. It's Kyra Knights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler and Tony at the board. We'll be right back. I'd ask you to play elves. All you need are elves.
Elves and all you need.
Yeah, that was a fun video. Anyway, hi, it's Spike. Welcome back to Kyra Knights. Lots of great texts already. This topic is pretty important to a lot of people. And I want to do this. I kind of jokingly said mental health influencers having seen a headline on Kyra's My Northwest. And this is a story written by our own Rachel Bell. And it's a pretty important story, so I want to spend this next couple minutes talking about this, mental health influencers as therapy on social media. The Washington Post reports as of August, TikTok videos with hashtag mental health in the caption have had more than 43.9 billion views. Billion views with a B. That's insane. Since August, or excuse me, as of August. TikTok has had 43.9 billion views of videos with hashtag mental health. There are all kinds of content creators with millions of followers doling out mental health advice without the education or qualifications to back it up. I get served a lot of mental health content on Instagram and TikTok, said Tatum Hunter, technology reporter for the Washington Post. A mental health creator might have a passion for the topic, or they might have found that talking about depression and anxiety is really relatable, Hunter said. People relate to it. It boosts their views and their followers. It's important to remember the incentive of social media, which is to get eyeballs on your content. But when it comes to talking about our health, those incentives can really be misaligned. The problem is that some people use these content creators as a replacement for actual therapy. They might self-diagnose themselves with disorders that they don't have, and the platforms are not reliably removing posts that spread false information. And the story by Rachel Bell on MyNorthwest.com says there are a few things you can do to validate a creator or a piece of mental health content you find on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube. One is to look for the creator's qualifications. Somebody who's a licensed therapist or doctor, it doesn't automatically make them a mental health expert, but it does help. Or at least it makes them less likely to spread misinformation. Excuse me. I'd also caution people to be aware of slippery titles like coach or expert. It takes no qualifications to post that kind of a label. If you scroll content long enough, you'll notice these themes, Hunter said. An easy way to talk about this is narcissism. People like to, you know, hang around on TikTok or Instagram. The more you engage with these posts, the problem is, and their creators, the more the algorithm will serve them up to you. So you're constantly being bombarded with these mental health messages that can overexpose somebody to these topics. Mental illness is not an identity. It's not a static state, said Hunter. You can get better, and you can get better, and the community should provide support and not just reinforce the idea that there is something wrong with you. Hunter understands the draw to these content creators. Young people are very isolated during the pandemic. A lot of people don't have access to mental health care or the insurance to pay for it if they do. And it's an easy way to connect with people who are feeling the same way you do. And that's important. So I can't walk in the middle of the street in San Francisco and yell, I suffer from anxiety, and have anybody respond or make a friendship. So social media does help you feel less alone, but it also does come with risks. Again, the story is at MyNorthwest.com. These are mental health influencers. Because, you know, kids these days, I mentioned that people under 30 get the majority of their news from TikTok, which is frightening. But even more frightening is that they're getting mental health care or advice from social media, from TikTok, YouTube, or Facebook, or Instagram. Again, as per the story here, it can be helpful to be in a community on social media, if not in real communities, where like people say, hey, look, I feel that way too. You're not alone. And if you do follow somebody with a hashtag mental health on a social media platform, like the story says, check out their qualifications. You know, and talk to somebody who is qualified. You know, we talked a little bit in the last break about how school teachers in Seattle are getting mental health training. If you're feeling this way, talk to a teacher. At least they can, if not help you, steer you in the right direction, somebody who can. You know, don't believe everything you read on the internet, especially when it comes to your own well-being and your own mental health. Unless it's a rainstorm, you can trust that. That's a real rainstorm. Doesn't take an expert to know it's a soothing sound. Yes, I'm trying to have an easier go of it tonight, people. We yelled at each other for like 3 nights this week, right? It was a contagious week, Matt, wait.
They mostly yell at me. They like you, Spike.
Nah, they yell at you, so, you know, come on. But it's nice to be able to look for things that we have in common. You know, look for solutions rather than blame for stuff. It's Kyra Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill. We'll be right back.